Welcome to the Precision Guided Podcast, the official podcast of the Georgetown Security Studies Review, where we cover all things national security, military, foreign policy, and history. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Zach Markinson. Today's guest is Alani Bankhead to talk about imposter syndrome. Alani is currently a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force Reserves. She has served as a supervisory special agent in the Air Force and works on the Hawaii Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. She has previously led a TED Talk about how an electronic sniffing dog named Lulu helps her and her team catch child predators. Alani has hunted terrorists, spies, and human traffickers, but today she is here to help you eliminate the terrorists in your head known as imposter syndrome. Studies show that 70% of people experience imposter syndrome. Alani is working to help these individuals turn the feelings associated with imposter syndrome into their greatest strength. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, Alani.
Thank you so much for having me, Zach. I am excited to talk with you today.
And just so our listeners get a good background on who you are, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Alani Bankhead. I'm a leadership coach, TEDx speaker, best-selling author, and I'm actually a career supervisory special agent. So I've done lots of counterintelligence, counterterrorism work, both inside the U.S. and outside the U.S. And I'm just really honored to be here to chat all things national security with you.
Awesome. So now that we've gotten all of our listeners pulled in, just so our listeners are aware, unlike other Precision Guided Podcast episodes that discuss national security, armed conflict, and all things war-related, this episode will be about a rather undiscussed but important topic called imposter syndrome. So to get us started on our main topic, Alani, would you mind describing imposter syndrome in your own words for our listeners?
Absolutely. So imposter phenomenon, as it was first known, was actually identified by two psychotherapists back in the 1970s. And what they identified was that there was a significant portion of the population, actually about 70%, who experienced this phenomenon of feelings of inadequacy and feeling like you're not good enough for whatever task or promotion, title, awards, accolades, all of those things. And that eventually your coworkers, your bosses were going to figure out that you also were unworthy, and that when you are found out to be an imposter, that horrible things happen, you lose esteem and respect in your community, and it's horribly embarrassing, and you can even lose your house and your job, and just all these horrific things happen. And so over time, the term became known as imposter syndrome, and it actually manifests in a number of different behaviors. So in cognitive thought concepts, we know that thoughts lead to emotions, which lead to behaviors. And so if you think you're an imposter, the subsequent behaviors are going to look something like perfectionism, overworking. So you're trying to overcompensate to make sure nobody finds out you're an imposter, which ultimately leads us to burnout, of course, unfortunately. So if you're experiencing burnout, probably a good chance that you're experiencing imposter syndrome. If we are in the business of, you know, potentially doing work where you're getting accolades or awards, you might downplay those compliments. So kind of being like, no, it was a team effort, even though you actually did most of the work. Same thing goes financially. So from a money standpoint, we have a harder time negotiating salaries when we're entering a job or asking for raises. So there's just a number of outcomes that result from imposter syndrome, in case you're wondering if you have it or not.
That's so interesting that you said 70% of people are experiencing imposter syndrome as we're speaking here today. What are your thoughts on exactly why so many people haven't even heard of imposter syndrome and why there are such a small amount of people actually talking about this, even though so many people are experiencing this exact thing?
Yeah, for sure. I love that you honed in on that percentage, because actually, since that first study in the 70s, Similar studies have been replicated over 60 times, and that same figure of 70% comes up. And actually, it goes up if you're in a marginalized community. So if you're a person of color or a woman or something like that. And so the reason why we're not really talking about it is if you look at the actual definition, your inner kind of voice is telling you, you can't let anybody know about your weaknesses, because if you are found out, then all these catastrophic things are going to happen. And so the actual cure to imposter syndrome involves vulnerability, which is the complete opposite of what we want to do when we're in that fear cycle. And so that's why people aren't really talking about it. And when I first discovered it, I think I was more than 10 years into my career as a special agent and an intelligence professional. And when I heard the statistics, I got mad, because I was like, wait, 70% of every office I've ever been in has experienced this, but we're not talking about it. What is happening? Like, this is completely unacceptable, because I personally lived in fear for the longest time. And so my mission now is to make sure that other professionals don't experience the suffering that I did, because it's completely unnecessary. And particularly in the national security space, you know, we have a lot of crazy things happening in the world right now. And what the world really needs is for those really heart-centered professionals in the intelligence community to present their best gifts, and doing it from a place of trust and not fear that they're going to be found out, right? So we want you guys to feel comfortable in just showing up as powerfully as possible, because our country and the world really needs you now more than ever. So it's a really important topic in the national security space.
And also such a great message for not only Georgetown students, but all other students in DC area and beyond, in terms of what we really need for the future of the national security workforce. And you also touched on this briefly, but I'd love to get your perspective on, like, what types of people are at higher risk of experiencing imposter syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, in the bigger scheme of things, I mean, I've had the privilege of working all over the world. I've worked operations and investigations on most of the continents, I think, with the exception of Australia and Antarctica. And what I have seen, whether you're American or not, but folks in the national security justice spaces, for the most part, are very, I call them heart-centered professionals. So they joined because they want to serve a bigger cause than them. Many of them are volunteering to give their lives over to concepts like freedom and democracy. And so that's really incredible. And they also understand the high stakes involved in the work. And so because they are in service to something bigger than themselves, oftentimes they can feel very small in the midst of that grandeur of the mission. And so what happens is, because you want to do a good job, you want to do the best job possible, also keeping in mind that oftentimes our work has life and death implications for people, right? So if you're not doing your operations planning properly, people can die. If you, as an intel analyst, do an assessment incorrectly, it could get the wrong information to the wrong decision makers, and that could result in increased deaths, right? And we're keenly and acutely aware of the impact of the work that we do. And so it causes us, because we're thinkers, right? We're hyperachievers as well. It causes us to have a tendency to overthink, and then we think ourselves to a place of, ooh, maybe I'm not qualified for this. Maybe I'm not actually good enough, especially if you're starting out in your position. And that overthinking will cause you to not take action at all. So if you engage in some behaviors like doom scrolling on your phone, right? So if you're on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, hopefully not on TikTok because it's Chinese owned, right? But you are avoiding your reality because on some level you feel victim to these thoughts that you're not good enough or you're not qualified. Same thing goes for if you're binge watching Netflix. I mean, there's definitely a time and a place, don't get me wrong, but if you're doing that, it's because you want to escape the reality. You're not feeling empowered enough, because when you feel empowered, you take action, and it's happy, joyful action, and you feel aligned with your purpose. And so we're definitely at a higher risk as national security professionals, because we deeply care about our mission and we don't want to be the one that causes it to fail. And so absolutely, I've seen specifically to national security and justice system folks, it affects us, I think, at a higher rate. There are no studies on purely national security folks, but just from my experience, when people get very candid and they have a safe space to talk about it, and they admit all sorts of fears that they have, even though when I'm hearing it, I'm like, I've seen your work. You're incredible. You're amazing. I can't believe you're thinking these things. So it's very common, and the vast majority of folks experience it. Now, I will also say that the funny part of imposter syndrome is that if you were actually an imposter, you wouldn't doubt your own skills, right? So we've all encountered that one person in the office or at school who talks like they know things, and you're like, oh my gosh, you clearly do not know what you're talking about. Like, stop before you hurt people. And those are the real imposters. So if you're not walking around thinking that you're God's gift to the national security enterprise, you're probably, you know, you're okay.
That's so interesting, because coming into my first year at SSP, a lot of the faculty members talked pretty openly during orientation about imposter syndrome and how so many people are experiencing this. One, you're not alone. But two, if you're not experiencing this at a certain point, especially because you are surrounded by so many other very high achieving individuals, take a look and gain a better understanding of how and why you're not experiencing it, just so you can turn that around into something positive that can motivate you in the future, right?
100%. And I'm so blown away that the faculty do this, because this was not a thing in any of the courses I took or any of the units. Like, imposter syndrome literally never came up in conversation. So the fact that Georgetown is providing these amazing professionals to give their experience, I just really commend the program and the professors. But yeah, and it's funny, because the other thing about imposter syndrome is that if you are experiencing it, it is because the purpose that you're working towards is so aligned with your personal life purpose that if you fail at it, you're going to feel horrible about yourself, right? And so actually, what they're talking about is what I call the cycle of imposter syndrome. So you can get to a point where, rather than being in your emotions and being scared and letting your imposter syndrome run you, you can incorporate it into a cycle where you're harnessing your imposter syndrome. And so I'm going to give you an example. But from my own life, obviously the listeners can't see me, but I am female, obviously. Well, they can hear that, right? I'm very petite. I'm very, very small. I look very young for my age, and I'm Latina. And for the longest time, my imposter syndrome told me that those four things, I am too Latina, too small, too young looking, and to female, were my weaknesses. And I had to overcompensate for these weaknesses because I was in a very male-dominated space. And so over time, I realized that there was a cycle happening where if I leaned into those quote-unquote weaknesses I thought I had, that they actually were kind of the source of my greatest superpowers. So when I was in Iraq running informants for special operations. So I was a human intelligence operative. So briefcases full of money. I was meeting with informants and my interpreter and exchanging that money for information on where senior terrorist leaders were. I could use that physical appearance that I thought was a weakness to actually get into parts of the country that my white, male, big, muscly military counterparts could not get into. Same thing with when I was a senior Pentagon bodyguard. It's called a personal security advisor. When I was in that role, again, I mean, my imposter syndrome was so loud in my head, only to realize that it's your brain and how you use it that affects your success as a senior bodyguard. It has nothing to do with how you look. It has nothing to do with your strength. And actually, I always had the element of surprise working in my favor, because nobody would look at me and think I'm the imposter syndrome. And we got feedback towards the end of my time there where the instructors from the schoolhouse said, hey, actually, your team has the least number of security incidences. And we actually think it's because you're kind of undercover as the bodyguard rather than being out in the open. And so when you're able to identify what exactly is it your imposter syndrome saying that is your weakness, And then you can start to learn how to harness that weakness and actually use it in service to the mission. Magical things happen. You get better results than you ever could have imagined. And you're empowered, obviously, because rather than fighting your imposter syndrome, you're now an observer of it. You're not beholden to it. You're not, you know, the emotions don't run you, you run them. And so now I'm at the point where when I experience imposter syndrome, I'm like, ooh, that means I'm really aligned with my life purpose. And if I keep doing these steps that I teach folks that I work with, teams and individuals, that the miracle is just on the other side of it. So I know this to be true. And we're able to hold space, especially for Georgetown University students and young professionals, because you don't necessarily have 20 years of work experience like I do, where, you know, it took me 12 years of a lot of trial and error, but you absolutely can use your imposter syndrome to work for you. So
that's such an important detail and also such a practical example of turning something that most people would think of as a negative thing into a very, very positive thing that also have not only you, but your team and your protectee safer every day. And on that note, you were describing imposter syndrome as sort of this like cycle. It's almost like a vicious cycle that if you can't really interrupt it, it would probably continue sort of rotating around. When did you sort of recognize that some of your thoughts and emotions that were sort of controlling you initially, when did you recognize this? I'm wondering if you could also provide any like advice for people that might be going through this cycle right now in terms of how do you take adequate steps to sort of break that cycle?
Absolutely. So it is like a cycle. I like to joke that imposter syndrome is like the little terrorist in your head that's wreaking havoc on you, right? Like national security professionals will know that reference because it can be terrible. And so when you're going through it, first of all, to your point of recognizing it is absolutely the most critical part of this process, because imposter syndrome often runs subconsciously through your head. So it comes in the form of an I am statement or maybe an I am not statement. So for me, again, it was I'm too small, too female, too Latina, too young looking. And the underlying message that my imposter syndrome was telling me was those four things didn't matter. So I don't matter. And because I don't matter, I can't make an impact to protect the vulnerable. And so once you get those I am statements unearthed, there's actually a story that created that imposter syndrome. So for me, long story short, it was a professor in college who told me that I wasn't good enough and would never be a military officer or do any of the things I wanted. He didn't even think I was going to graduate from college. And it birthed my imposter syndrome more from the sense of I was going to show him that I was going to do those things, right? But even though I achieved the best GPA ever that year and I graduated and I did all the things he said I couldn't do, that but you're not good enough kept following me to every new national security job that I worked. And I didn't uncover it until I got to that bodyguard job. And I really had to lean into, so my intuition one day, there were a couple of instances actually where I was just miserable in my emotions and feeling so inadequate. And something inside of me, I can't describe it, it's a phenomenon, but my intuition asked me, do you trust that you're where you're supposed to be? And, you know, I'm Latina, so I got a little bit of sass, right? And so I was like, oh, fine, yes. Like, I don't know how I know this, but I know that I'm supposed to be here, even if I feel incredibly uncomfortable. Less than a year after I leave that job, I go to work at one of the largest anti-slavery nonprofits in the world. And I'm in charge of all their South American anti-child sex trafficking, anti-child rape portfolio. So that's all the investigators, all the operations, including training, host nation law enforcement. And my boss calls me one day and says, hey, you're one of two trained bodyguards in the entire organization. We had a client and some staff members murdered in Kenya by the police. would you mind going to Kenya and protecting the remaining staff going to and from court in this very high profile international case? And oh, by the way, we're a nonprofit, so you don't have a badge. And again, you have no authority to work in the country. And we may or may not have budget for a bulletproof vest for you, but are you willing to go? And I immediately, that's the moment for me that I realized, like, oh my gosh, there is something bigger at play. I don't know how to describe it, but I did not realize that my time at the Pentagon was in preparation to protect these people who truly are giving their lives up to protect their communities from the corrupt police that were in Kenya at the time. And so for me, that was when it solidified that, oh, like, even when I'm in a job that I don't get, and I had plenty of those when I was younger in my career, like there were jobs where you'd hear, bloom where you're planted. And I wanted to throw up because I'm like, you're just telling me I'm in a terrible job and you want me to be happy about it. And I'm not happy, right? But I can clearly see now how every job I had in the first 12 years of my career prepared me for the very important work of really seeking justice, but not only in traditional methods, but breaking the paradigm up, which is really what the justice system and national security is doing right now, right? We're in a lot of transition and upheaval because we need new thinkers and new players and young, energized professionals to come in, trusting in their abilities, their skills, and their gifts so that they can reframe national security in a way that is productive and so that we can bring people together again. And so recognizing it is by far the most important thing you can do. And then we have some other tools that are in play. You're welcome to buy my book if you want to get the full scope of it, right? But in general, recognizing it. And then the other thing I would say is naming it, which sounds ridiculous, but giving it the name of like a cartoon character or someone that kind of mimics that voice that you're hearing helps to create separation between you and the inner imposter. And so if you can create that separation, it's no longer part of you and it starts to immediately weaken. And so, yeah, I know it sounds ridiculous, but you need to try something a little bit out of the box if you want to really be effective in overcoming your imposter syndrome.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's almost like separating yourself from sort of the negative feeling that you're having. And also one other interesting aspect I think that I want to point out as well is I think your sort of aha moment of my previous experiences were really helping me build up valuable, unique experience to get where I am today, where I'm the only one that can protect these vulnerable people. I think that's really interesting because you previously also talked about the fact that your imposter syndrome can be strongest when your goals are really aligned with what you want to do in life. And I see from your career that you've spent so much time protecting the most innocent, vulnerable people from like the worst thing that could possibly happen to them. So I'm wondering if that was when you really came to that like aha moment, that realization that you're effectively able to protect these really important but vulnerable people with the skill that you built up from, you know, working as a close protection agent with the Air Force and your previous experience as well.
Yeah, no, that's spot on. And the funny thing is, it's a constant evolution even for me. So after even that job that I had, I moved out to Hawaii where I created and ran and trained law enforcement at the federal, state, county, military levels on how to run anti-child exploitation operations. And I literally use the same model that we hunted terrorists to hunt pedophiles and traffickers. And so again, seeing how all that work built on itself empowered me to know that actually I have a very specific set of skills, right? I'm going to channel my inner Liam Neeson from Taken. And just like you guys, every individual in the national security space has a very specific set of skills, whether you're a special agent or an intel analyst. Even the admin professionals are critical to our success in protecting the homeland and, you know, protecting democracy abroad and whatnot. And so I'm really grateful for that knowledge, because even when I was working the human trafficking, child exploitation stuff, the results we got were extraordinary. I mean, we're running, I think about 65 or more of my cases have been adjudicated so far, and we're running 100% conviction rate, wow, which is insanity. Like, you don't hear that in the justice system. But what I try to be more open about is when people ask me how I achieve that level of success, I tell them, actually, for 2 to 3 days before every op, I want to throw up. My imposter syndrome is really loud in my head. But because I know this pattern, again, I know, okay, my imposter syndrome's here. This means I'm really aligned with what I'm here to do. And this is a very important mission to me. And it literally has potential life and death implications, right? So we know that perpetrators of child exploitation have oftentimes gone hands-on. And if I don't do my job well, the abuse will continue with these kids. And that's a really heavy weight to carry. But rather than focusing on that downside, I'm able to reframe it in my mind so that I can focus on the work that we do has consequences that we're never going to see, right? So working child exploitation or terrorism or counterintelligence or whatever it might be, how do you measure if your success was or if your operation was successful? You know, how many lives did you save? There's no way for us to count that. So you as a national security professional on some level have to trust that the work I'm doing is having an impact in the space, even if I can't see it, right? And so that's also where we have to support each other in being vulnerable and admitting when our imposter syndrome's getting loud in our heads. And so we can speak truth to each other, because sometimes you need that sharpening from your coworkers when you're having a down day. I mean, I have my down days. I have plenty of down days. But again, that's another resource that I can use to sharpen myself and keep myself ready to do the work. So,
yeah, I think it's so important that someone with such an impressive background like you has also experienced feelings such as self-doubt and all the other feelings associated with imposter syndrome. I think that already helps support so many of our listeners that may be feeling the same thing. And sort of on that note, in your experience, when you're working with all these other high-achieving individuals around you, how do you see some of these beliefs, thoughts, emotions coming about in their head? Can you sometimes recognize when other people are having imposter syndrome, and what do you usually do to support them?
Yeah, absolutely. That is such a fantastic question, because national security professionals are highly analytical. We have to be. That's what we're trained to do. We're trained to assess risk and gather as much data, and even the analysis that we do, right? We say with high confidence, or, you know, it's never 100%. And so it can be hard, because a lot of the things that I'm talking about, they are literal phenomenon, right? It's imposter phenomenon. And the definition of a phenomenon is something that you have no proof exists, but you know that it's true. So when you're experiencing the imposter phenomenon, you know that that is your reality in the moment. When you go outside and you look at the night sky and you see the stars and you feel awe, right? You feel connection. You're like, man, I'm this tiny speck on like this tiny earth, right? There's no scientific way to explain that feeling of connectivity, but you know that it's there. And so analytical folks can struggle with this, but it, just like going to the gym for the first time, it's just a muscle that you have to flex, right? So it's a matter of figuring out for you as the individual what your imposter syndrome cycle looks like and what tools and techniques you can use to get to that place where you are still connected, trusting in the outcomes while still producing a high output, quality products, and being mission focused. The other thing I will say about this, and I'm going to be very honest in my 20 years of experience, I love people and I want everybody to be at their very best. But the truth is that there's really only a handful of people that push the mission forward. So you have like a very small percentage of dirtbags, for lack of a better term, right? So you have those folks that are hanging on, doing the bare minimum just to keep the job. It's a roof over their heads. No judgment against them, but I'm not here talking to them. Then you have, 80% of your folks in the space that are doing, the best they can, but they're just kind of going along with it. They might be too scared to really achieve their highest potential. Who I actually normally focus on are that top 10% of folks that are the heart-centered, high achievers, mission-focused, very analytical, that have that imposter syndrome, because those are actually the people that make the magic happen. And that might be an unpopular statement. I'm not dogging the other 90%, but the important thing is the message is for, if you are someone who knows that you were put in this mission to change the world, to save lives, and you're willing to sacrifice and do all of those selfless things to get the mission done, you're probably suffering from imposter syndrome. And I would highly advise that you find other like-minded individuals that can also sharpen you and get you to that place of this bigger picture. Because once I was able to connect with other folks in that space, again, the magic happened. Now, even the past operations I did with the crazy results, it's funny because those operations had between 50 and 100 people in them. Agents, investigators, analysts. I love my intel. Love my intel. You guys are amazing. But the truth is that in the beginning, there were only 4 people that actually believed in that mission. And when we started getting the success, now everybody wants to bandwagon on. But I love to give the shout out, because when you hear something like one person can change the world, it sounds cheesy, but it's true, because I know the 4 people that brought a massive amount of justice to impoverished, unsupported communities. And so I encourage you guys to find your people that you really gel with, that you can be honest with about your struggles, because they're also going to be high achievers, mission focused, very analytical, and just push each other to be better, right? That's one of the things I love about the DC area. Obviously, Georgetown's in DC, right? I love that environment because everybody had a master's degree, everybody was squared away, and I was just constantly the best version of myself professionally, because you were surrounded by excellence all the time. So that's what I would recommend for folks.
I think you bring up 2 really great points that I want to emphasize. Firstly, is that 10%, as you said. The top people are really the ones that are experiencing this imposter syndrome the most, which I think is crazy, because it's almost like if you are experiencing these imposter syndrome feelings, that means you are probably one of those top 10% or so that is really driving this mission forward. And secondly, I think you bring up a really good point about finding that community, finding other people that you can talk to about it, and also being available for other people that are experiencing this and come to you. And really honing in on that community aspect, I'm wondering if you might have any advice on either finding that community or being a type of person that other people feel open to talking to about either imposter syndrome or other types of support.
Definitely. So as far as community, you can literally Google imposter syndrome, group coaching, or therapy. Like, there are specialized practitioners in that space. I myself have multiple group coaching events, or I do one-on-one coaching as well. So if you want specialized help, or if you prefer the group setting, or even if you want to buy the book, right? I have things at different price points. But the point is that for you to find that community takes trial and error too. So if you find yourself gravitating towards a particular speaker on imposter syndrome, there are a number of different practitioners in that space, then put yourself out there, invest in yourself, and acquire those resources so that you can learn more about what your imposter syndrome looks like. Because here's the thing, really what we're trying to do, and this is my mission, is where I was, it took me 12 years to start figuring out my stuff. I want to shorten the timeline for everybody listening. So it doesn't take them 12 years. I want it to take you 3 to 6 months so that you can get on with the work that you have to do, because time is the one resource that we cannot generate more of. And I truly suffered unnecessarily for the longest time. Now, if you can't find something that resonates for you, create it. Truly, like, all it takes is you posting on Facebook or putting a flyer up in, you know, the commons area or whatever. Hey, if you're suffering from imposter syndrome, let's meet here at this time, or email me at this and we'll figure out a time to meet or something like that. It literally only takes two people. And, you know, there are lots of other resources, whether it's books as a whole. I struggled for a long time with finding mentors, because part of it was my imposter syndrome was telling me, you're not worthy, right? I'm like, oh, I can't ask this person to mentor me. Like, I'm a nobody, right? All that stuff was happening. And books were such amazing resources. So, like, Jim Mattis's book, right? Former SecDef, Call Sign Chaos. Oh, that book just blew me away with his candor and how he talks about when I was a young military officer, these were the things I learned. And they call him warrior monk because he's a scholar, which seems silly, you know, in a career field that's focused on killing and rah-rah and like very tactical elements. But he says, if you're not reading, then you're going to put people in body bags through your bad lessons when you could have read about it from someone like me who's been there and learned from my mistakes. General Colin Powell, right? Also former chairman. Like, I mean, he was so amazing. He talks about his worst failures. And I connect with, you know, oh my gosh. I remember when he talked about his biggest failure being when he went to the UN and talked about WMD in Iraq. He said that was by far his biggest failure. And I was like, oh my gosh, this man is sharing his worst failure? Because your imposter syndrome tells you you can't do that. And here are these giants talking about, I made a fool out of myself in front of the entire world, literally. So books, create the community for yourself, find the community. You guys can reach out to me. I will happily connect you. If you don't resonate with my work, but you want to connect with another imposter syndrome coach, I know plenty, because the community is very small, but we are committed to elevating professionals to the point where they can do their work with joy and actually thrive and feel really connected to the work rather than feeling insecure about themselves and unworthy. So
the national security community is such a small community that it really does help to pay things forward. It really does help to elevate others. And with that said, I want to give you one additional opportunity to either emphasize or add on to any lessons that I haven't asked you about specifically that you think are really important to share.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I just want to let the listener know that they are way more powerful than they realize. That oftentimes, 95% of the time, the biggest barrier to your success is you. And oftentimes you don't even realize that that thought is subconsciously sabotaging you. So I would just really encourage you guys to trust that you are where you're supposed to be, that your path is so much more badass than you could ever realize if you believe that. And if you don't, talk to someone who you know will speak life into you. But right now in the national security space, we need your gifts more than ever. And I'm so thankful to you guys for your hearts for service and just wanting to help protect life. So I'm always at your guys' service. Reach out anytime.
Thank you so much. And I think this will be extremely important for not only SSP students, but also SSP professors, Georgetown professors in general, that are also experiencing some of these same emotion, thoughts, beliefs, and stuff like that. I do want to emphasize your book one more time, The Least of Us, How Your Imposter Syndrome Points to Your Greatest Strength. And you also include a lot of really good tools within your book as well.
I do. So I explain the entire 5-step process to helping you uncover, dismiss, harness your imposter syndrome. So unfortunately, I wish I had more time with you to fully explain it all, but it's all contained in the pages of that book if you're interested.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Alani.
Thank you, Zach. I'm so looking forward to seeing you kicking butt in the space, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you to all of our listeners out there. This is the Precision Guided Podcast, the official podcast of the Georgetown Security Studies Review. If you are experiencing imposter syndrome, please consider purchasing Alani Bankhead's book, The Least of Us, How Your Imposter Syndrome Points to Your Greatest Power, for a helpful guide on how to turn your imposter syndrome into positive empowerment to drive your mission forward. As a reminder, the views expressed on this podcast are the views of the participants alone and do not represent the views or opinions of Georgetown University, the Precision Guided Podcast, or any other agency. Thank you for listening to the Precision Guided Podcast. Follow the Georgetown Security Studies Review on social media to stay up to date on the latest Precision Guided Podcast episodes and GSSR content. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, or you can visit our website at georgetownsecuritystudiesreview.org.